Hello and welcome to Inside Property. I am Richard Blanco, coming to you from my living room, of course. As is customary in lockdown, today's episode is being recorded remotely via an online platform. So apologies for that sound quality that, of course, we're all used to now. The housing market in England is open for business. Those 400,000 sales transactions that were paused on the 23rd of March can now proceed. Letting agents, landlords, surveyors and contractors are free to conduct physical viewings, albeit within strict guidelines. In this programme, we shall be unpacking those new rules, asking how the mortgage landscape has transitioned and peering into our crystal ball to determine what might happen to sales and lettings moving forward. I'd like to welcome my three guests, Jay Rooney, who is financial advisor at broker One and All Financial Services, Lawrence Bowles, analyst at Savills Research, and Rachel Hannicket-Brooking, who is an Arla Property Mark board member and owner of Francis and Kate, a South London-based property management and consulting firm. Now, Rachel, it would be good to hear from you how agents are finding the new social distancing guidelines. I understand that they need to wear PPE and there are hygiene requirements, for example, having to clean door handles and leave all the doors open. How are they coping?
Richard, nice to join you today. Thank you so much. Agents have really embraced PPE and everything that goes with it, because basically the market is starting again, and it's what we've all been wanting to have and happen. But it was interesting because the government actually announced that the market would be reopening before they gave us the guidelines. So a lot of people were running around trying to see how they could translate this into their businesses. And it has been really, really successful. Loads of PPE, gloves, loads of sanitizer sprays. The problem that I've had fed back so far is it's actually the people that are coming to view, the prospective tenants that don't really want to wear a face mask. But companies are also having to look at their office spaces, keeping people still working from home. And I was really happy to hear that one of the agents has actually dumped the suit, the traditional estate agent suit, because you can't get a suit dry cleaned at the moment. So it's down to casual clothes that they can come home, take off and just wash.
Right, okay. And I've heard anecdotally that some applicants are not wanting to do physical viewings because they're worried about contracting the virus, and also some tenants are not wanting to allow them. So there is still some onus on virtual viewings. Is that right, Rachel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think at the moment, it's been well publicised that areas like London and the South are a little bit further ahead than perhaps the Midlands and up north in regards to eradicating or stopping the rate of infections. And so we're seeing that actually translated into the market. Tenants around London and the South seem to be a lot more happy to let people in or go and see properties, because virtual viewings have been absolutely embraced by the industry. I think virtual viewings are here to stay. I think that it will actually lead to quite a lot of savings for agents, because they can, wheedle out the people that are just tire kickers or actually not particularly interested in the property before taking them out. It is at the moment, it's really, really positive signs coming from the market. And of course, you've got some tenants that are still completely locked away. And we'll, as an industry, we completely respect that. And we don't go near those properties.
And I heard from one agent that they were really surprised by the number of inquiries that they got when the market opened up again. Are you finding that as well, Rachel?
That's across the board. I mean, at Arla Property Mark, I represent all 30 regional representatives. So that's Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and all of England. Frustratingly, for a lot of the reps, is that only England is open for business. Scotland and Wales are still chomping at the bit. But everyone has reported that the minute that government announcement hit, there was a surge. And again, some of the larger agents, that everyone is coming off furlough. It's really, really positive signs for the market.
Well, it's been great, I think, that the market's been opened up in England, because it's going to help the economy come out of the gloom of the COVID crisis. potentially quicker, of course. But, let me come on to you, Jay, because I wanted to ask you about some of the implications in the mortgage market. And first of all, let me ask you, Jay, about mortgage payment holidays, or I prefer to call them mortgage deferment, because that payment holiday idea just makes people think that suddenly you don't have to pay anything. A lot of chatter in the landlord community over whether taking a mortgage payment holiday will affect your credit file. And of course, UK Finance have said, no, it shouldn't do. You know, what is the reality about this?
That's a great question. And one that we've been speaking to a lot of lenders about. There seems to be a little bit of a difference in interpretation in the marketplace from various different lenders. So for instance, we have had landlords who have spoken to current lenders, lenders who are active in the buy-to-let sector and, of course, the residential sector, asking for payment holidays. They've all assured their customers that it'll have no detrimental impact on their credit file. Some other lenders, such as Mortgage Express, which is now defunct, of course, and the likes of Topaz, through their various different brands that purchased old Mortgage Express, Bradford and Bingley Books, they're also saying it won't have an impact on your credit file, but when pressed, they're not being specific as to whether or not it will show as a zero or show as a U on the individual's credit file. What we know is it won't show any adverse credit. It may not show positive credit, in which case it may be U for unclassified, but it won't show any adverse credit. Now, moving forwards, I can tell you now that current landlords that are applying for mortgages right now, all lenders are asking if they have had to take any payment holidays. They want to understand as to why they needed to take payment holidays. It doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be given a buy-to-let mortgage. But for instance, if you are a buy-to-let landlord with 5 buy-to-let properties and you've now applied for 5 mortgage payment holidays, it's unlikely that lender's going to be keen to lend to you. But if you're a landlord with 15 properties and you had no choice but to ask for a mortgage payment holiday on 1 or 2 of them, it probably wouldn't stop them. They just want to understand the why. In relation to the residential sector, as a rule of thumb, we're finding that lenders are not willing to take on anyone from a remortgage capacity who's currently in a payment holiday and that hasn't at least made one up-to-date payment. We're finding that clients are cancelling their payment holidays, making an up-to-date payment so that they can then go ahead and perform the residential remortgage.
Very interesting. And I wanted to ask you what the position is if a mortgage applicant is furloughed or claiming the self-employed help. Is that going to affect their ability to get a mortgage?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's become a stock question for many lenders. The lender that we've noted more than any in terms of the residential sector is Santander. It's now just a stock query. They want to understand if the employed individual has been furloughed. They want to understand if the limited company director or partner or sole trader has been affected by COVID-19, or do they think their business will be affected by COVID-19? If so, in what manner? And have they sought any government assistance? Now, we've been quite fortunate. Our clients that we've been arranging residential mortgages for over the past 8 weeks, their businesses have not been affected by COVID. So we have yet to, in fact, find out if it is a problem for people whose businesses have been affected significantly. In relation to employed individuals, most of the major high street lenders, the market leaders, they are allowing people who are furloughed to go ahead and apply for mortgages if necessary, but they're only taking their furloughed income into account. And the largest building society in the UK, of course, our friends at Nationwide, they have now decided to completely ignore any possible income as a result of overtime, bonuses or commission. That's it. Even if you haven't been furloughed, they're only taking into account your basic salary. Now, not everybody's followed suit. As I say, it's down to interpretation. Some lenders are responding more positively than others.
And of course, for some applicants, it might be better just to wait a couple of months if they possibly can, just to see if things change, I guess, as the crisis develops.
As you say, Richard, many applicants that are coming to us looking for good, responsible advice, in the event they have been affected, we're advising them, well, what we need to do is you certainly don't want to be raising any capital. You don't want to be borrowing any more money. It's all about trying to ensure that we keep your costs to a minimum in the interim, but not just in the interim, looking over the next 2 to 5 years for various fixed rates. You do have to temper always. You have to try and balance, I should say, always the client's want and desire for more borrowing, perhaps, and what's responsible.
And do we know if having taken out a bounce back loan or one of the coronavirus business interruption loans will affect a person's ability to get a mortgage?
A very, very interesting question. So what we're finding is if you're a limited company director, the answer is simply no, not at all. It will not appear on their personal credit file as it is the business's loan. It's a business finance, just like any other business finance that somebody may take, whether it's asset finance or whatever it happens to be. Now, for sole traders and partners, the lines are a little bit more blurred. And again, it depends on the institution providing the loan. So for instance, we're aware of one major bank who will remain nameless, who's happy to help sole traders, won't find the sole for a bounce back. Most sole traders are looking at bounce backs. They're not looking at C-bills, or sorry, coronavirus business interruption loan scheme. We call them C-bills, forgive me. But for sole traders looking for bounce back loans, and they tend to fall into that category, there's one major banking institution that is choosing not to place it on their personal credit file, despite the fact they're a sole trader and they are the entity borrowing the money. And then there are others who are placing it on their personal credit file. And of course, that may have an impact, not so much in an adverse manner credit-wise, but imagine you have a bounce back loan that's going to cost £400 a month to service. That will be counted against you whenever calculating affordability for one major lender who will remain nameless, who's incredibly Spanish.
All right. With bounce back loans, of course, there are no payments due for 12 months, but will that still be counted as a commitment?
Indeed, it will. The answer is yes, it will. In the same manner that a help to buy equity loan, there's no payments required for several years very often with a help to buy equity loan, and yet the lenders still have to allow for whenever the applicant, whenever the client will enter the repayment period. So the answer is yes, if you're a sole trader and if it is going to appear on your credit file.
One issue that I've discovered as well, Jay, is that people's mortgage offers are expiring because, of course, there's been sort of 2 months where not very much has been happening, or terms are being reviewed. Are you seeing some transactions collapse because of mortgage offers expiring?
That's a very interesting question, because, in fact, I meant to be completing on a buy-to-let property myself over the coming days with Precise Mortgages. You know, Precise Mortgages, one of the major buy-to-let lenders in the marketplace today, and that is due to expire, I believe, around the 4th or 5th of June. We're hoping to complete before then. If we can't, it's not just as simple as getting an extension as it used to be. There's a lot of forms that have to be filled in. Precise have to consider whether or not they still want to go ahead with it. They want to speak to the surveyor to understand if the surveyor has any concerns in relation to a reduction in value. That just didn't used to happen. You know, once upon a time, if you needed a 1 month extension on a 3 month buy-to-let mortgage offer, that was pretty easy. However, lenders are trying to do what they can. They're trying to appease. The reality is loan to values have been reducing. You know, for instance, I'm not aware of any 80% buy to let mortgage available in the marketplace today. Most lenders have dropped to 70 or 75.
Okay. Well, let me go on to Lawrence. Some fairly good news, ironically, today from the Office of National Statistics, Lawrence, that house prices in the 12 months to March 2020 were up by 2.1%, which is fastest growth since December 2018, and rises in London were 4.7%. So that might have been very good news if we hadn't just had two very difficult months.
So we've had a whole load of data coming in from the ONS, from the Nationwide, all saying how wonderful the market was until just before lockdown started, which is not particularly helpful. So of course we've had those ONS figures that you mentioned. The Nationwide came out last week to say that house price growth in the year to April was 3.7%, but with the caveat that 80% of the transactions in that April sample were exchanged and they had their prices agreed and everything was done apart from completion before lockdown started. So actually it doesn't really reflect a post-lockdown world. The first signs we have of data coming out that reflects that post-lockdown period comes from HMRC. You can always trust the tax man to be on the ball with these things. Figures out this morning confirmed that transaction volumes have fallen by about 55% relative to the five-year average. There were 38,000 transactions in April this year, which is less than half what you'd normally expect to see. So that reflects that lockdown period, and we're expecting to see a similarly low level of activity in May, given that for most of this month, government advice has been to avoid moving home wherever possible.
Now, we spoke a lot about pent-up demand earlier on in the year, and of course there was the good old Boris bounce in January, which is a distant memory now. But anecdotally, I'm hearing that agents are quite busy. Of course, Rachel has confirmed that. So is that pent-up demand still out there, and is it going to be unleashed immediately, or do you think people will hold back, Lawrence?
I think there's still, so all the reasons that drive people to want to move home haven't gone away. People are still having families, their kids are still growing up and wanting to move out into a home of their own. And ultimately, with all this time we're spending together, there's probably more couples getting divorced. So we do expect to see, you know, that demand still growing. I think we've got to make a distinction between demand and desire. We have seen an explosion in web traffic on our site, people searching for properties on the Savills website, the most web hits we've ever seen in the last couple of weeks, you know, even higher than we were seeing before lockdown. The ability of these people to actually transact will depend on how willing mortgage lenders are to actually play ball with that. And as we've heard from Jay already, that's not necessarily a given anymore.
Now, most house price predictions range from -5% to -15% for this year. How are Savills Research seeing the sales market moving?
So it's difficult to really measure an average transaction value when there's so few transactions to average from. So we're currently anticipating price falls anywhere up to 10% this year, but off a very low number of transactions. I think, you know, looking across the UK, the impact is likely to be pretty similar wherever you are in the country. And if, as we see most economic forecasters suggesting at the moment, if we see the economy returning to growth towards the tail end of this year or early 2021, we should see house price growth return into positive territory not too long after that.
But we're seeing predictions of 10% unemployment, a drop in GDP of 35%, according to the OBR. Does this mean we've come to the end of this house price cycle, Lawrence?
I mean, this is the very definition of a black swan event, isn't it? It's not something that any of us has really seen in our lifetimes. So yes, there's going to be a lot of disruption while this while we work through the ramifications of the lockdown and seeking a solution, a treatment, a vaccine for this virus. But ultimately, the fundamental drivers between housing supply and demand are still there. There are still an awful lot of people who want to own a home and want to live in a home, rent a home. There's still not enough properties available for that to be a reality. And so we'd expect to see continued pressure on house price growth and rental growth as a result of that.
And are you looking at a U-shaped, V-shaped or an L-shaped or any other shaped recession, Lawrence?
I think the best one I've heard is someone calling it the Nike swoosh recession.
Yeah, I like that.
Ultimately, we do housing markets. We're not economic forecasters. So we've got a range of opinions within our office, or within our virtual office at least, of people who favour the short, sharp bounce and people who are already stockpiling barrels of water for the inevitable Mad Max-style future that awaits us all. It's becoming increasingly difficult to believe those early optimistic views that actually it's all going to bounce back up and by Q3 we'll be back to normal. Certainly, we're expecting things to change over the medium term at the very least. Part of that is going to be about sort of GDP recovery and a higher unemployment rate, but a lot of it is just going to be changes to the way that we work and do business. And so there's more fundamental changes at play here than just, you know, the number of unemployment numbers or GDP numbers. There's going to be changes to people working remotely more frequently, expectations for when you work and how productive you're expected to be, which are all going to factor into earnings growth and all those other factors that influence house price growth.
And do you think it's going to be one of those housing markets where even though sales prices might fall, actually the lettings market remains quite buoyant? We've already heard that it seems to be quite buoyant, you know, in lots of parts of the country.
It's difficult to see what's going on with the lettings market for now, honestly, because that sort of government support for tenants so far has been in the form of sort of a stay of execution when it comes to evictions. And so with that and the advice not to move home wherever possible, you don't have any new lets agreed to work out what is actually happening to rent. So all we've heard so far is lots of people renewing, generally at the same rents they were paying before. And for the most part, for those larger landlords who are reporting publicly at least, rent collection rates in line with or only very slightly below where they were before the crisis. So I think in that sense, you know, it's a positive vote for the sector in that, you know, you certainly wouldn't, if you were a retail landlord, you wouldn't be expecting to collect the same amount of rent as you were last month. So that's a massive vote of confidence for residential. But potential issues in the next few months, as we come to the end of that, you know, that eviction ban, as we start to see the market moving again, it's going to be very interesting to see just what happens to rental values, given, as you say, we're looking at higher unemployment numbers and potential falls in earnings.
Yes, so evictions are not allowed before the end of June, and then 3 months' notice is required anyway. So the first evictions won't happen before the 30th of September. And of course, the court service hasn't been moving for some time as well, has it? So that's going to be moving pretty slowly. Let me come back to Rachel. Rachel, how are letting agents' businesses faring? Are we likely to see any agents going under because of the COVID crisis?
Yeah, just to comment on a couple of Lawrence's points. First of all, it's fantastic to hear that potentially people will be stockpiling water rather than toilet rolls. But also, we are hearing, you know, deals are being done. You know, the market has started. Actually, one of my representatives works for Savills. You know, we expect to see probably some price realignment in Central. And we are also hearing reports that tenants are actually putting in offers below asking price. Because, again, you know, this media that people that believe in and suck up, that, you know, that the headlines that sell the papers sometimes lead them to think that, you know, landlords have got no money, and so, you know, that if they do a cheeky offer, they're going to get it accepted. So I think you know, it's going to take a little while for the market to settle. Now, back to your question, I mean, how are agents faring? Well, you know, agents have been taking an absolute pummeling over the last few years with new legislation, and also, you know, they've just lost the tenants' fees. So with the tenant fee ban, we've still got ROPA, the regulation of property agents, that is coming in. We have got the electrical safety that's due to start. And, you know, also fees are going to be lost. You know, there was a honeymoon period with the tenant fee ban that you could still charge tenants who are on older leases. And that very shortly, in a couple of weeks, actually expires as well. So agents are taking a hit already. And it's going to be very interesting. There was a lot of agents that were planning on exiting the market already because it was just getting too tough. I can see that there's still some acquisitions going on of agencies. And I do, unfortunately, you know, fear that we will see businesses, especially businesses that aren't letting. I mean, you know, lettings used to be the poor cousin of sales. And we've noticed definitely over the last, you know, 6-7 years, that actually, especially in branches that have a sales and a lettings department, you know, the lettings departments are producing more fees, more revenue. So if people have a strong lettings department, I will see definitely a lot more businesses failing and having financial pressures.
As you say, the government has piled on the regulation in the last 2 to 3 years. What does Arlo Property Mark think of the government's approach to the housing market during the crisis, and in particular the reopening?
Property Mark's been working with the government extensively. We've been lobbying and we've been speaking directly to them. You know, Property Mark members have benefited from the fact that we've managed to negotiate business rates relief, which was, you know, not thought of. Furloughed staff, commission payments weren't going to be taken into consideration. And, you know, the government are in a situation where, you know, they've never experienced this before, and I just think that they have failed to catch all. They maybe are delaying things like these electrical certificates because, you know, there's a whole backlog of gas safety and stuff that needs to be done, and if all of a sudden we're going to be booking out every single electrical contractor because we have to have these certificates in, you know, they've got to think very carefully now about what their priorities are in respect to, you know, keeping industry moving.
And just to be clear, electrical certificates will be required for new contracts from the 1st of July, but they won't be needed for existing contracts until next year. The government has decided to plough on with that regulation. You're listening to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco, and my guests are Jay Rooney, financial advisor at broker One and All Financial Services, Lawrence Bowles, analyst at Savills Research, and Rachel Hannick at Brooking, who is an Arlo Property Mark board member. Jay, let me come back to you. I wanted to ask you, what is the lender's appetite for lending? And, you know, what might we see change as we move into the recession?
It's an interesting question. What we're finding for the most part are that lenders are, in fact, very keen to lend if they're able to lend. And we're finding that in different sectors of the market. Certainly in the residential market, we're finding that because, well, lenders are awash with money. Pension providers and corporate investors have given them all these corporate bonds. They're sitting on this money and they need to lend it. And on a smaller, obviously on a smaller scale, you find that the same with the specialist buy-to-let sector. I won't start naming buy-to-let providers, but we know who the major buy-to-let providers are, and they receive their money via normally the wholesale money markets, and they want to get it loaned. That's the bottom line, which is why what we found last week, as soon as physical valuations resumed, they were all very keen to start getting products out there again. And there are some lenders, such as the mortgage lender, such as Paragon Mortgages. They've been keen to try and lend throughout the whole lockdown experience by way of desktop valuations.
Now, you mentioned valuations. There is this new phrase, material valuation uncertainty, which is popping up on valuations. And there is, of course, that valuers are going to be very cautious and what the applicant might consider to be downvaluing their properties and making it harder for them to raise finance. And what are you seeing or predicting around this, Jay?
Well, we've been quite fortunate so far. The applicants that have been coming to us, certainly in the buy-to-let sector and the residential sector, that have wanted to raise capital or needed to raise capital and been in a responsible position to do so, and they've all managed to do that by way of desktop, remote, non-physical valuations. Physical valuations, of course, resumed last week. They've all been booked in. Ask me the question again in 2 weeks' time. I'll tell you how the physical valuations are going.
Yes, absolutely. Now, some lenders have stopped lending whilst they take stock. One commercial lender, for example, Synergy, has told me that they're waiting and seeing, and that they'll start lending to existing customers again shortly. How long do you think it's going to take lenders like that to take stock?
I should point out, I think that's the exception rather than the rule. The particular lender you've mentioned has enrolled itself in the CBILS scheme, the Coronavirus Business Interruption Loan Scheme. From what I understand, they, along with a number of other lenders that do a lot of unsecured business lending as well, are focusing on supporting the CBILS scheme. And it tends to be very much so because they only have a certain amount of resource and perhaps a certain amount of money that they're sitting on in order to lend. It makes more sense for them to focus on that aspect of borrowing rather than the property finance aspect of borrowing. As I say, I think that's the exception. I don't think that's the rule. I've been looking at that over the past few weeks, and what I've certainly found is all the major property players, whether we're talking mainstream high street, whether we're talking specialist buy-to-let property sector, they're keen to lend. And worth me continuing, in fact, that is the key difference in the property market between now and 12 years ago. 12 years ago, we had plenty of clients that wanted to buy property. We never stopped. The inquiries never stopped. The problem we had was there were no lenders who wanted to lend enough money. And the few lenders that were out there were making it very, very difficult in order to check all of the boxes. Now it's almost the polar opposite. The lenders are awash with money. And so this is a good thing. This goes back to what Lawrence was talking about. Whenever you were asking if we were looking at a V-shape or a U-shape or, God forbid, an L or even a W, and this is something that goes back to 2008. I think it was Martin Sorrell that created these letters to describe recessions and bounce backs. And what we've come to the conclusion is, at best, and I do think it most likely, based on all the economists that I'm speaking to, and obviously looking at our clients' investment performance as well, is what we'll find is it's a very, very short left side of the V, and it will be a very, very long right side of the V. I think the neck swoosh that Lawrence mentioned earlier is probably a very good simile.
Now, you mentioned a reduction in loan to values, and also we've had all these wonderful innovations like top slicing, the return of the refurbishment buy-to-let, more lenders looking at adverse credit. I see a lot of these sorts of facilities have now been temporarily withdrawn, and there will be some people worrying that this could become a lasting trend.
They have, you're right. Those are the more complex products. And again, that's something, for instance, one of the major lenders, Paragon, have paused on their short-term, their bridge to let, as Precise call it. And I guess that's, again, because they're having to focus their resource on frankly, the more vanilla propositions, the more vanilla inquiries right now. And again, that you have to bear in mind that these lenders, they're not Halifax. And they don't have thousands of people sat in a call centre. They're getting lots of phone calls from the existing customers that are asking for mortgage holidays or that are in payment difficulties. And again, they have to, you know, they only have a certain amount of staff to go around. So I guess that what we're finding is they're just focusing their staff on frankly, the more straightforward inquiries.
Lawrence, we looked generally at figures and the prospect for the housing market going forward. I wanted to ask you a bit more about perhaps some of the segments. Where do you think the market might be going in terms of north-south differentials regarding kind of forecasted falls or growth? I mean, we have seen a period where the northwest and the Midlands was doing very well. Do you think we've come to the end of that run now, or could that pick up again?
I think that in all likelihood, we will see a change in the distribution of price growth looking ahead. I mean, just looking, you know, in the immediate term, when we're talking about uncertainty and transactions slowing down and potential price falls now. Broadly speaking, we'd expect to see a very similar effect wherever you are in the country. The lockdown has impacted different parts of the UK pretty much equally. And until the last couple of weeks, as we've seen lockdown measures being eased at different rates in England compared to Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, we've seen the easing of those measures in line as well. I think in terms of the recovery, we're likely to see a faster recovery in the market in those regions where employment remains most robust. And that's going to be driven by those regions, those cities that have the highest proportion of employment in those more robust sectors. So clearly healthcare is a very robust sector right now. There's no chance of anyone, demand for healthcare workers dropping off anytime soon. But also those professional scientific and tech workers, those finance and insurance workers, these are sectors where it's generally feasible to work from home, work remotely. And so there's not been as much of an impact on them as you have seen in, say, accommodation and food service or leisure and food and beverage and so on. So those regions that have a higher proportion of people working in professional scientific and tech and that sort of thing, such as London, such as the East Midlands, should do relatively well. Those with a higher reliance on tourism, for example, the Southwest, may respond a little bit more slowly.
Now, pre-crisis, the market had been buoyed by the return of the first-time buyer. What do you think the prospect is for the first-time buyer market?
There's certainly still demand. There's no shortage of demand from those first-time buyers, particularly those who've been forced to stick at home in lockdown with mum and dad for the last few weeks. I can imagine there's probably quite a few who are desperate to get out and get into a home of their own. The difficulty there is their ability to access the market, particularly given what we've heard from Jay about lenders being more hesitant at higher loan-to-value ratios. And that's typically, if, as a first-time buyer, you haven't built up as much equity, you don't have that savings pot to dip into, so it's difficult to get that loan-to-value down. Still opportunities there. They've got a few options. They can use Help to Buy, which helps to bring that loan-to-value ratio down, and that's fine as long as there's a new build scheme in the area. And that's one of the reasons that we're expecting to see new build transactions hold up more robustly over the coming months than the wider market. And some of those first-time buyers will be able to call on assistance from the bank of mum and dad, but that is going to be reliant on mum and dad, A, being willing to dip into their savings or dip into their housing equity, and B, being able to, particularly given the reticence again from lenders to sign off remortgages. So it's all going to depend on, again, it comes back to those lenders and their appetites to take on that level of risk.
You mentioned new builds. Now, of course, construction has been halted. Although construction could continue, a lot of construction businesses chose not to. And presumably that means we'll be seeing considerably fewer new builds completed this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to, for broader national context, of course, in Scotland, all construction is shut down that is not non-essential. So if you're not building a hospital, you can forget about it. In England, we've estimated that at one point we were looking at about 50% of private residential construction was on hold. And since then, we've seen a return to activity. But builders are reporting that they're able to operate at a lower efficiency than before because they're having to implement social distancing on site. It is difficult for a pair of workers to sort of put a door lintel in while also remaining 2 meters apart. So we're generally hearing reports that sites are back up to between 70 and 80% efficiency given those restrictions, even accounting for being able to work for longer hours on site and sort of doing multiple shifts through the day. So we would expect to see a slowdown in housing delivery. We'd also expect to see an increase in the number of that, the proportion of that housing delivery going to affordable housing and those larger scale investors as builders look to do bulk deals in order to try and make their cash flows look a little, lot more healthy. It makes them able to recycle their capital more quickly. So we could see a shift in the supply of housing towards that more affordable and purpose-built rental model.
Rachel, one of the challenges that landlords and agents and I guess tenants have been dealing with has been requests for rent reductions. I had a tenant call me today and his rent was due today. My heart sank because I thought he was going to ask me for a rent reduction. And he just said that one of the toilets wasn't working. And I'm so relieved to hear that a toilet system isn't working. But I hear from chatting to agents that there was a huge surge in requests at the end of March and April. Has that calmed down now, or have we still got, are we experiencing a second wave of people asking for rent reductions?
No, I mean, I've spoke quite extensively with members on this. And I think the initial surge was, again, the government not being very clear on what they were saying. So, announcement, people went, oh, great, I don't have to pay my rent. But the agents and the landlords that got to know their customers, for instance, on my clients' portfolios, every single tenant was rung up. We asked them how they were, what was their financial situation. And then we steered them in the direction of, what the government was offering. So what we found within the lettings market is whilst there was a surge of people thinking, oh my God, let's stop paying rent, because the government did give so many measures and furlough and help like that, it actually minimized. And a lot of agents I've spoken to, their portfolios of people actually not paying rent is very, very low. So it was a bit of a big bang and then it just fizzled out. It was announced mid-month. It depends how people have geared stuff. Do you get tenants to pay on the first of the month or mid-month? But there are people that are suffering. But as I said, if you know your customers, landlords and tenants have been working well together.
Yes, and of course, the mortgage holidays were announced before furloughing and the self-employed help and changes to universal credit were helped. So that was the kind of thing that tenants latched on to the idea of the mortgage holidays, I guess, before that help was announced. And a lot of the work I've been doing, and I'm sure other landlords and certainly landlord associations have been doing, is helping tenants understand the kind of help that they can get. In terms of letting properties going forward, in fact, I've just instructed an agent and I was interested to see that we're putting the property on at slightly more than the market rent a couple of years ago. Are you finding that market rents are holding up, Rachel?
Yeah, we are. Again, within every area, there's a micro environment. It goes back to the old, the best property and the best locations. These will be the ones that will be snapped up and maintain their rental levels. We're not expecting a massive flood to the market of properties. So once the stock that's on the market has gone, will it be replenished? I think it's really important not to think, I might have lost rent or you know, I've not done this. I think it will be stabilised. And I'd be very interested to see if we get like we did 3-4 years ago, where there was a whole flood of sales stock that wouldn't sell coming onto the rental market. But there's so much demand, and people are behind the build to rent market. You know, they stopped building. You know, we need more housing. And so we're not looking at, you know, a massive realignment of pricing. I think they're going to hold steady the rents.
Jay, bank base rate is at this all-time low of 0.1%. And in fact, the Bank of England is talking about the possibility of negative interest rates. But two-year fixes are still, you know, in the residential market around 1.3, buy-to-let sort of 1.4, 1.5. Have they just hit a floor? Are we not going to see them dropping any further?
Yeah, they've hit the floor now, Richard, as you say. The fixed rates are much more aligned to bond yields and swap rates as opposed to the Bank of England base rate. It's a topic we have to educate our clients on very often, never more so for whenever the rates were chopped in March time. Because it's right for people to think Bank of England base rate has reduced its rate, therefore my mortgage rates will go down. And if your mortgage is a tracker, it absolutely will. And if your mortgage is a variable, many would argue it absolutely should. But when it comes to new business fixed rates, they are linked to how much the lenders pay and the investment managers for the wholesale money. And yeah, in my opinion, and the opinion of many of my colleagues, they've reached a floor. We have seen a remarkable closing of the gap between 5-year and 2-year fixed rates since 2018. And that just goes to the choppy equity markets of 2018, where portfolio managers and fund managers rushed to the bond market and flooded the bond markets with money as a result of the trade war that kicked off in 2018 between the US and China. And what we found then was that these fund managers that were issuing these bonds wanted to issue them on 5-year swaps rather than 2-year swaps. And as a result of that, as I said, the gap between 2-year fixes and 5-year fixes dropped dramatically. So what we're finding now for clients that were reviewing their mortgages on, that fixed their mortgages 2 years ago, their rates are broadly the same if they're looking for a 2-year fixed rate. But the 5-year fixed rates have dropped from maybe there being as much as an 80 basis points gap, maybe even a full 1% gap between 2- and 5-year fixed rates. Now, the gap is very often maybe only anywhere between 15 and 25 bips.
Sorry, Jay, it really is incredible, isn't it? I mean, the cheapest 5-year fix I found today was Coventry at 1.45% at 50% loan to value. And, you know, Santander has similar rates. And it's the cheapest time ever to get a 5-year fix, isn't it?
It really is incredible when you consider that I think Virgin Money's 5-year fixed rates start today at, I think, forgive me, 1.53, and their 2-year fixed rates are 1.62. So Virgin Money have managed to invert the cost of 5-year versus 2-year money. And again, that's the way they fund their business. So clearly they've been flooded with 5-year bonds from their funders. Can I just go back for a moment in relation to a topic that's come up a little bit in relation to mortgage holidays? There is a lot of chatter that the mortgage holiday program will have to be extended for a further 3 months. And that chatter has been increasing remarkably throughout the working day. And it's something that I personally, we always felt would happen. Whenever I was speaking to clients in March and I was doing 14-hour days for around 10 days between the last week of March and the first week of April for so many of our clients that were looking for guidance because they couldn't get through to their lenders. When clients asked me, how long do we think this is going to go on for? I honestly said to them, my personal opinion is it won't be a 3-month mortgage holiday. It will probably end up being a 6-month mortgage holiday for people that genuinely need it.
Okay, very interesting to hear that. Lawrence, I hesitate to bravely reinvoke the B word. Yes, Brexit. potentially, potentially we could have a Brexit no deal on the 31st of December 2020, couldn't we? And I wondered how much that has been factored into predictions that we've seen around house price falls.
Completely, yeah. So obviously that date still hurtles on towards us, and there is a sort of a bit of a long stop date in the middle of the year, at which point it will be, beyond that point, it will be too late to ask for any kind of extension. Certainly the rhetoric from government so far has been very much along the lines of, nope, Brexit is Brexit, is a done deal. We're in the, 31st of December is something we were willing to die in a ditch over. We will, of course, remember the multiple promises made by various politicians that they would die in ditches or lie down in front of bulldozers and so on. And the veracity with which they held on to those promises when push came to shove. One way or another, we are anticipating some form of political fudge, if not a full extension by the time we get to the end of the year, that will extend the status quo, or at least some form of the status quo, for a little bit longer. So we would expect to see sentiment, confidence in the market dip as we come up to that that deadline, just because, as always with all these negotiations, they will leave it to the very last minute before they announce anything. But broadly speaking, we expect that the majority of the disruption, the majority of the impact from Brexit has already been accounted for. And so we'd expect to see a lesser impact on the market than we were previously anticipating.
Well, every cloud has a silver lining. So if we get a bounce next January, what will we call it this time, Lawrence?
Oh, we're running out of bees, surely. We've had a Boris bounce, we've had a Brexit bounce. Maybe by that point, it will be just around 9 months after lockdown started. So it'll be a baby bounce.
Right.
Although I've heard it mentioned by various people that if there is a baby boom as a result of lockdown, they will all be first children. Nobody who's got kids running around is having any additional
ones right now. Okay. Well, on that,
I'm more than happy to confirm there won't be one in my house.
Rachel, I don't know if you want to comment on whether you're having any more children or...
Two's enough, thanks.
Okay. Well, look, that's it for this programme. You can find all 26 editions of Inside Property and get in touch with us via our website, insideproperty.org.uk. My thanks to my guests, Rachel Hannick at Brooking, Lawrence Bowles and Jay Rooney. And be kind to yourself and others. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.